I'd like to extend my thanks to Nicholas, Olga, and the Capital Link team for inviting me on moderating this panel. It is great to see so many people involved in shipping gathering today, exchanging views about the ever-changing shipping landscape. And I'm glad to have on my panel distinguished players in the shipping industry in order to cover a very hot topic, which is alternative financing. As far as I'm concerned, alternative financing is not a spot-on description of what alternative of what they provide, as it appears to become to be becoming mainstream nowadays. That's only an observation. Alternative financing is an area that has rapidly evolved from a niche solution to a critical pillar of shipping financing. As regulatory and capital constraints continue to reshape the banking landscape, alternative lenders, whether these are credit funds, leasing houses, or investment banks, are stepping in to fill in the gap. However, in my view, it is not just about replacing traditional bank debt. Alternative finance has its own structures, its own appetite, and competitive advantages. Today, together with the panel members, we shall explore how these financing solutions are adapting to shifting marketing conditions, the role they play in the capital structure of shipping groups, and what should ship owners expect going forward? To answer these questions, we have an exceptional panel today representing a cross-section of alternative finance players. Instead of lengthy introductions, I shall let each of them introduce themselves briefly and their firm's role in the market. Nicholas.
Thank you, Chris. I'm Nicholas Petragakos. I work with an investment bank called Alantra. Our practice focuses on shipping finance, maritime and offshore. That includes all conventional sectors as well as the offshore sector, obviously. We have assisted clients in the past 7 years to raise about $4 billion in financing, both on the debt side, the leasing side, as well as forming joint ventures for between investors and players in the industry. We are based in Dubai. As a team, we have also a representation here in Greece, and the Greek market is obviously one of the main focus for our business. In terms of size of owners, I would say our focus is on the mid to smaller size, which is also probably the size that doesn't have access to all the options in financing, and we think we're the most active advisor in that sector.
George Vicaris with Entrust Global. I'm a managing director focused on the maritime investment business at Entrust called the Blue Ocean Fund. And this business started in 2016 with the hire of Sfinang to start the group. And since then, we have grown to a 28-person team focused solely on the maritime sector. We have financed in total about 500 vessels and deployed over $5 billion, soon to be close to $6 billion after this Q1 ends. And our focus is really across all ocean industries. So we're not just looking at the commodity shipping sectors. We're also investing in the offshore, the cruise, ports and logistics and equipment. And when you look at our portfolio over the past decade, what we've built, it's really a cross-section of most of it in the Western Hemisphere counterparties. But Greece has been the majority of our investments. About 70% of our portfolio, it comes from the Greek market, and that's through both senior secured debt, common equity, and everything in between. And the beauty of our fund is that when we raise capital, we spend a lot of time raising that capital, explaining to the market, the institutional investor market, what shipping is and what the maritime markets is. And to be there for all opportunities, you have to have flexible capital. So we have capital that really could take advantage of wherever you are in the cycle, both on the product side, think common equity debt, as well as on the industry side.
Thank you very much, George. Kevin?
I'm Kevin Cole, the is now its director of Europe and North America department. I joined ICBC Leasing in 2017. So ICBC Leasing is 100% subsidiary of ICBC Bank, which is the biggest bank in the world. By the end of 2024, the asset portfolio of ICBC Leasing is $15.5 billion. We covered all the vessel type from bulk, container, gas, tanker. I'm very pleased to join the panel. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Kevin. Last but not least, Iraklis.
Καλημέρα σας. Good morning. My name is Iraklis Tsirivotis. I'm the Director of Origination in Neptune Maritime Leasing. As the company name stipulates, Neptune specializes in ship lending through the form of financial lease predominantly. We, over the last 4 years since we started the business, we have grown the business to close to $500 million and would like to grow much more. And very glad to be here.
Thank you very much, Iraklis. The first area that I would like to explore today with my panel members is the state of the market and the competitive positioning of alternative financiers. Nicholas, alternative finance is sometimes seen as a temporary substitute for bank lending. Do you believe it is now a permanent part of the ship finance landscape? How do you place alternative finance nowadays in the shipping world?
It certainly is part of the landscape. It has solidified its position, I would say, after 2019. It got a good backing from the COVID period when banks effectively disappeared. It is also capital that's more flexible in all senses, and more importantly, it's not regulated capital, so it doesn't get affected from regulatory changes. It's not as affected by geopolitics as banks should be. And as such is, let's say, more permanent in its availability and supply to ship owners. Of course, it's also very smart capital. It's capital that takes a lot of time to raise. It's not deposits, right? So there is a lot of work being put into getting even smarter people give you money to invest into shipping. So it certainly is part of the landscape and one of the tools that ship owners can use to finance their investments. One major change we have seen in the past 5 years is that we've seen names that you wouldn't expect to utilize alternative finance as an option in their financing, and that includes public companies, both in the shipping side and the offshore side, but also on other auxiliary sectors like the cruises, for instance. And we do expect that to remain as such in the future. Of course, banks have come back roaring, especially in places like Greece and Germany. They've assisted a lot of their clients again, and they've raised LTVs. They dropped margins. They're competing between themselves for the same 50, 60 names. But there is also a large part of the market, of the ship-owning market, that doesn't have access to that that capital. For that alternative finance, which for us includes funds, but also leasing companies, private equity funds, ship lending funds and whatnot, can still bridge that gap. When we work with clients, we don't present this as a bridge financing. Sometimes it's capital that enables them to make an investment because there is no other availability with the characteristics they would like to seek. But I think bank capital would be replacing fund capital in 2-3 years' time once these investments run their course and they become more bankable. So for some cases, it can certainly be a first step into ship financing for a few clients. But I don't see it going anywhere. If at all, we see more players coming into it. The structures that are available on the funding side for the funds are also very efficient these days. So you can effectively get returns of equity-like returns with debt. So that would bring more capital also in the alternative finance space.
Thank you very much, Nicholas. Iraklis, with traditional banks, albeit fewer still active in financing, how do you differentiate leasing structures from bank debt? And more, and in particular, what are your focus assets and areas? And what is your greatest competitive advantage?
Yes, I think the main competitive advantage of leasing, and in our case, that's applicable, is the flexibility that you can have in the structure. As we know, banks have quite tight standards and policies, and the room that they can maneuver around is pretty limited, especially in a weakening market like some of the markets are at, right now, dry bulk, for instance. So with leasing, you have much more flexibility. And that plays a greater role, as I just said, when the circumstances are such that you need absolutely greater flexibility, for instance, in terms of repayments, if the market is pretty low. That's one. Secondly, another differentiating factor is the markets that we cover. For example, both our geographical reach is much broader than most banks. I wouldn't say that we cover the entire globe, but even areas that are not very much reachable by banks, like Middle East, we do cover. Apart from geographical differentiation, also it has to do with sector differentiation. For instance, offshore is still a segment that most banks are not that active, with a few exceptions in Scandinavia. But for us, it's an area that we like to continue to grow. So, and with regards to, other factors that, like the cost and et cetera, it's obviously a point of discussion with time. You know, it sounds like much more expensive. But when our clients make the effort to run the numbers and scenarios, the weighted average cost of capital, and if you try to also the price in flexibility, actually comes very, very close overall to what the bank will offer. So if you do the exercise, if you go through the step to actually analyze numbers properly.
Thank you very much, Heracles. Kevin, one would say that sale and leaseback structures remain quite popular, especially in the Greek market, but equally, one could say that competition from Far East Lesors is quite fierce. You're a Far East leasing house representative. What makes your institution's offering stand out?
Thanks for your question. I would like to see ICBC leasing play very important roles in the global shipping financing. ICBC leasing ranks for the top 3 shipping financial institution in China and the top 5 in the world shipping financing institution. So the reason why we'd like to see is based on the 2 main points. The first is, as 100% subsidiary of ICBC Bank, ICBC leasing benefits from the, parent company. We have the same rating which we enjoy from the, the synergy of the global network. So we can get very competitive, funding costs. Then we can give a competitive pricing to clients. So secondly is, from the established show ICBC leasing, we focus on the shipping financing. Shipping is our, one major division we focus. And we enter Greece shipping market from the 2015. Seabulk is our first Greek Greece clients. So we have enough experience in the shipping cycle. We covered all the vessel types and from bulk, tanker, container, guys. So in conclusion, we think we have the enough experience. We are professional. We can offer the competitive terms and condition. So that's what makes us stand out. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Kevin. George, how do alternative credit funds like yours structure deals to be attractive to both investors and ship owners? Perhaps you could give us some examples of structures you've done or you propose to do in order for our audience to get an idea of
what
you do.
The return requirements for our investors hasn't changed. And we've seen spreads and yields in some credits in the shipping market come down, but that hasn't altered how do we look at transactions. And when we look at anything, it starts with the details of the transaction, what return we could get from that. So that means we can't just do generic, plain vanilla senior secured loans all the time. There has to be some usually unique element to it. A lot of what we've done recently has been on the acquisition financing side, where there's a lot more diligence done, not just on the assets, not just on the management, but also on the legalities of the transaction. And when you look at the team we have constructed at Entrust Blue Ocean, you'll see a cross-section of investment bankers, lawyers, restructuring specialists, and that's to be there for special situation financing. So we're not going to get these returns lending 50% to a dry bulk or tanker vessel. It tends to come on the more unique transactions where a lot more underwriting and diligence needs to be done. So by having a team with this background, we can move very quickly to underwrite a transaction. And on the flip side of that, as an owner, if you're looking to acquire, whether it's a strategic acquisition or a fleet of vessels, you're willing to pay more, understanding that we're there for execution or low execution risk and high probability of delivering. So that's how we earn our returns for our investors and how ship owners are also happy to work with us, and that we're there for all situations.
Thank you very much, George. Very interesting. Now we're going to turn our attention to a second section that I would like to cover today, and that's going to be the financing strategies and market trends. I would like to extend my first question to Iraklis, focusing on, for a moment, on scale and efficiency in light of the consolidation trends that we have come across over the last couple of years. And equally, I would like to turn our attention towards smaller shipping companies accessing alternative finance, because we have established that larger players do have access to both bank debt, but also alternative financing. Is there a preference for larger deals? What's the position in respect of smaller tickets, Iraklis? Thank you.
Yeah, let me start with the last part of your questions. Clearly, we are open to do business also with smaller groups. So size, in some regards, is important, but not it's not an absolute entry to do business with us or not. So that's clearly fine with us, even for smaller tickets. In terms of consolidation, there hasn't been that much progress. Personally, think there will be much more in the years to come for a number of reasons. Access to finance is one, but also all the new regulations are coming in force. Actually, quite a few already came in force and more to come. And what we experience is the smaller groups with limited resources find it very difficult to cope with. For instance, Fuel EU, it's quite intense exercise for a small group to follow up with all the changes and what they need to do and how to implement that. EU, it's something else, and IMO might bring something different. So the burden keeps increasing for the smaller groups. That's why probably also we've seen more and more consolidation, not in terms of ship owning, but more in regards to ship management. And I think that's a trend to continue. That's great for us, because then operational risk hopefully will reduce. And then we can focus on other risk areas and try to be more efficient in our structures by just focusing on fewer risk areas. Now, something else I want to add is the fact that depending on where the company runs from, for example, if you are in Greece, you still have very good access to banks, even if you are small. And predominantly that's because of the Greek banks. But if you sit in a different area in the globe, and you're small in size, that's probably a very detrimental factor to have access to finance, which might not be because of higher risk, but purely a situation that you are just located in an area that's not covered by many financiers.
Thank you very much, Iraklis. George, I think the bank panel did cover at some stage the issue of credit structure relaxation. Are financing terms becoming stricter, or do you see more flexibility in 2025?
That's typically a product of what the market provides. I could tell you from Entrust perspective, we try to maintain our discipline. We do maintain our discipline on the covenant structures. There are certain things that are untouchable, maximum loan-to-value, minimum liquidity, which are needed to get through any cycle. But as far as structuring, I think that's where the rest of the loan agreement, that's where we provide the most flexibility, in that we can move the documents depending on the situation. And it goes back to what I stated earlier, having the team that has gone through ups and downs and past cycles and understanding the risks and structuring around that. We try to be flexible with our counterparties, and hence why we've been very active deploying capital. It's because of that flexibility. So there is this element of covenant-wise, I don't see them loosening up. Thankfully, I think all the people on this panel, as well as other people in this space, are not loosening up covenants. But when it comes to other elements of a transaction, we don't have a structured items that we require. We could move according to each specific transaction.
Thank you very much. Nicholas, although Basel IV, which is on us already, doesn't directly affect alternative financiers, impose higher capital requirements and stricter risk assessment criteria. In your view, what's the impact on ship finance, including financiers and shipping groups which are involved, from the perspective of alternative financiers?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think Basel IV has quite a few problems, especially in interpretation and implementation across jurisdictions, but I think the common impact will be to make financing either more expensive from a capital perspective for banks, or drive some of the banks completely out of the game. We saw that in implementation of Basel III in the past, so we do expect the same, and especially we speak primarily for European banks, which are the driving force in ship finance. There are other regulations that were imposed on them in the past decade, and we've seen what the results of that are. I think that's probably net positive for alternative finance, including leasing houses. In general, non-regulated capital will come and play a role to replenish part of that availability. But in general, we do expect banks to remain the majority of the capital that that finances shipping. I think that's probably 60% today. I don't believe it will go to 30 or 40. After all, even for the European Union, shipping is infrastructure that's critical. So there will always be some capital for that. One sort of collateral damage of that will be decarbonization of the industry and getting into new technologies, because these come from new buildings, which are usually the more expensive assets in shipping. And unfortunately, alternative finance is a bit too expensive for two young ships, so far at least, besides leasing, which is probably the most competitive. But from a banking finance availability, I think this will come.
Thank you very much.
Chris, can I...
Yes, of course. Yes.
Because I would like to challenge a couple of statements you made. The first statement was about the fact that European banks drive ship lending. That was the case 10, 20 years ago. Net growth, and I think Kevin can also comment on that, next to me, came predominantly from Asia, net growth. Over the last 10 years, if you add up all the numbers, you figure out that it's pretty stable, if not decreasing bit by bit. So they are, unfortunately, as European, the European banks are not driving that. And then if you add Basel IV to the statement, then it gets more complicated for the years to come. Because from what I understand, Asian financiers, and again, happy to hear your thoughts on that, are going to be very little, if at all, impacted from Basel IV compared to most of the large European banks.
Thank you very much for the add-on, Iraklis. The next topic that I would like to cover is geopolitics, which has been covered by previous panels, but also risk and distress situations. There have been dramatical geopolitical shifts during the last year and lately after the American elections, and the status of series of hostility activities and wars around the world. This no doubt have an impact on global finance. What's affecting your business, George, the most right now, and how? And are you anticipating further changes in the next year or so, and how this will affect your business further?
Yeah. Thank you. And to predict what will come out of Donald Trump's mouth is not an exercise we try to practice every day. We just see what happens and react. But ultimately, when you look at transactions, what's the basis of them? The supply side of the fleet and the demand side. The supply side has been historically predictable. You could see what's coming out over the next 3 to 4 years based on the order books. Of course, thereafter, what's going to come out with geopolitics and the discussions between China and the U.S., we're all waiting to see, and that will determine investments in the future. So supply side, which used to be, I think, 100% predictable, at least for the next few years, is now there's uncertainty thereafter, depending on the way discussions go with the leaders of the largest economies in the world. Demand side, there's even more unpredictability right now. So to take a view on that, I think, is a fool's game, and we're not going to be sitting here telling you where we think markets are going to go, but there are some fundamentals which scream out to us. If you look at the container ship side, there's a very large order book, generally speaking. Now you can dig into each size, but ultimately there's a big order book there, and depending on what happens with the Suez Canal and Red Sea, that could obviously further worsen the supply story in general for shipping companies. Now, there's a lot of liquidity there, so it's not like this is going to be an immediate distress situation, but we're keeping our eyes on that situation. Tankers, who knows what will happen between Russia and Ukraine over the next 6 to 12 months, but ultimately that sector benefited from that war, and we all know the reasons why, and considering the values in that sector, we're more focused on the downside, or there's more risk to the downside there. So everything we do in the sectors that have benefited over the Black Swan events over the last 4 years has certainly been more of a focus on the downside risk because there is more of that right now. We've been actually focusing more on opportunities for economies that have struggled over the last 10, 15 years and are now seeing growth. So emerging markets is coming back into play, I think, as an attractive entry point. Obviously, it depends on a country-by-country basis, but we're seeing a lot of interesting opportunities there where not a lot of investment has gone into these countries over the last 15 years, and we think there's room for growth there.
Very interesting. Kevin, we've been experiencing a booming shipping market over the last four at least years. Are you seeing an increased risk of defaults in the medium term, short-term, medium-term, or long-term? And if so, how do you expect alternative finance providers, including yourselves, to respond? And how do you typically handle restructurings when LSE faces financial difficulties?
Well, this is frankly speaking, this is a good topic. So according to my personal idea, I think in the short period, we don't see any change the shipping owner will have a default, because due to the last 2 or 3 years, the ship owner earned a lot of cash from the booming market. And if you discuss the shipping financing with the ship owner before COVID, the shipping owner would like to seek for higher leverage, longer tenure, longer profile. And now after COVID-19, if you go to the ship owner see, the Fed rate is very expensive. They would like to lower the leverage, lower the debt ratio. So we see the majority of ship owner balance sheet is very, very healthy. So during the last 2 or 3 years, they refinancing, they do a lot of prepay, they lower the debt ratio to prepare for the crisis in the, 1 or 2 years. So this is my personal idea. So frankly speaking, ICBC Leasing start our shipping financing from 2009. And in the last 12 years, 15 years, we ever suffered with some, default or company bankruptcy scenarios. What I want to impress is we have enough experience, so we show to respect market. And if the clients have some problem payment of the debt, we will work together with the clients to think out what's the best way, what kind of work from the owner side can do, what kind of work from the ship financing institution can do. So we will work together to overcome the crisis. So this is my idea.
Thank you very much, Kevin. I think it's time to look ahead into opportunities and outlook. George, what do investors and shareholders look for in a good shipping deal today?
Yeah. So first thing is
apart from making a lot of money.
Yeah, first thing is always return on your invested capital. So that's always going to be there. Nothing's changed there. But the rest of it is obviously where the reason why they pay us to invest their capital. And it's the underwriting and putting their capital to good use and opportunities, not just to get a quick trade, but really they're investing in a business, in our business, to be able to invest their capital over a decade plus. So we're not out there looking for something that we could flip in a few months or a year. We're looking for investments that, it goes back to, you mentioned small investments. We're not here to provide $10 million loans and that's it with one counterparty. That $10 million loan we're hoping could grow to $100 million, $200 million exposure with that same counterparty. So it's all about good investment day one, but also longevity of that investment. It's not about returning the capital right away, because otherwise they wouldn't be expecting that liquidity premium if they're getting their money back right away. So counterparties matter, and that will always be the case. And if you look at every time an investor asks us what makes a good investment, the same question, we always start with the counterparty. It's the ship owner. It's the history of that ship owner. Have they been able to navigate through the cycles, and how have they navigated through those cycles? Are they good partners with their financiers, with their investors, et cetera? So history matters a lot to us, whether it be with us or at other institutions. So whenever it's a new counterparty, we reach out to everybody we know to do the background check. So counterparty is always the most important thing. And of course, the collateral, the assets themselves, the ships. I know we may not have time to get into ESG right now, but we're not an ESG fund by any stretch of the imagination. But what we do look at is where will this asset be and how will it trade in the next 3 to 5 years when regulations do come in. So the quality of the assets that we are investing in is very important as well, combined with the counterparty. So it's those two elements and obviously the return, which is always the case.
Very reasonable. George, Iraklis, do you anticipate more competition between alternative financiers and banks as liquidity returns?
Liquidity has returned. I'm not sure if it's going to grow even more. I will argue probably not. And not only that, but also it has to do with the fact of the underlying market circumstances, how eager they will be to extend credit. Let's take dry bulk, for instance. Rates are close to OPEX, if not below, in some cases. You go to a bank, you ask for a loan. From my previous experience, they will need to run a 12-month, if not 5-year prognosis. And the numbers are, you know, your break-even is much higher than current rates. So, you know, that's already an issue to deal. And we don't have that constraint because with our capital, private capital, we have a much greater degree of flexibility of how to structure repayment, et cetera. So I think the competition will stay largely where it has been for the last few years. I don't expect it to increase even more. Actually, if the situation, the dry market and the tanker market keep correcting, most likely than not that we will be in a better position to explore new opportunities compared to the big banks.
Thank you, Iraklis. Nicholas, having you next to me, I cannot resist asking this question. What advice would you give to Greek shipping companies looking to access alternative capital?
Yeah, that's an easy one. Hire an advisor. It's a landscape that's very complex. Currently, we have been working with about 15 funds. We have two of them here, but there are another 13 or 14 or maybe more. There are about 30 lessors in China that invest in shipping. We've worked with quite a few. There's about 10 Japanese JOLCO or loan or equity arrangers. There are about 10 banks in Japan and 4 banks in the UAE, and we work with all of them to invest outside the jurisdictions. So it's not an easy feat to say, okay, I'll get cash from an alternative financier. When you have an advisor like us, of course, we run a process. We have them compete between themselves, so it's not a broker or an email exchange. It's much more than that. And of course, there are projects that might not be relevant for one investor, but might be relevant for another, depending on the risk appetite review in the specific sector, the assets, etc. We have the knowledge of that by being in contact with all these investors all the time. So I think that's the advice: hire an advisor.
Thank you very much, Nicholas. I'm afraid we're running. Time is approaching. Kevin, how do you see the global ship finance landscape evolving over the next 5 years? It'd be interesting to get your view on that.
I would like to see the competition in the shipping financing will be very fair in the next 5 years. Due to the lack of the asset in the global side, I think it's not only European Bank but also the Chinese financial institution to come back to the shipping financing. So in the past, aircraft financing is very, very popular in the European Bank, but COVID changed the logics. So we see in the next 5 years, the competition will be very fair. And the next trend is we will see the Chinese financial institution will play more and more important roles in the European shipping financing. So if you looking at the top five shipping financial institutions in the world, you will see three Chinese financial institutions accounts for the top five: Bochum Leasing, China Eastern Bank, ICBC Leasing. So and in the meanwhile, we see the more and more Chinese second tier leasing house entering into the shipping financing, try to be more and more aggressive. So this is my personal idea.
Thank you very much, Kevin. And last but not least, because I would like to get something useful out of this for our audience, what's one key takeaway for ship owners in the audience looking for financing solutions? Can I get the view of each one of you, starting from Iraklis? Just one takeaway point.
Only one. It will be differentiate and expand your lending group and your banks and financiers in general. I think having a much greater diversification there, it will be greatly valuable in the future.
Thank you, Iraklis. Kevin?
So I think the owner shall be diversify his shipping financing resources. Maybe European Bank is very very competitive in the pricing, but you will see the long range ship is much more important, and she shall be diversifying his financing resources.
George,
transparency. We view every investment we go into as a partnership with the other person, the other counterparty, and do not hold back any information, because if you do that, people assume the worst. So transparency.
Nicholas?
Yeah, I would say it's the advice is the takeaway is take your time. There is capital available for shipping right now. People should do their homework and not just decide on financing, but eventually a partnership with their financier. That will also eventually create diversification in their funding sources.
Thank you very much. What's crystal clear today is that alternative lenders are no longer just a fallback option. They're shaping the future of ship finance with innovative structures, competitive capital, and adaptability in an uncertain world. To our panelists, thank you for your insights and perspective. And to our audience, I hope the discussion has been fruitful and enlightening. Thank you very much for your time.